The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Thank you, Chris, very much. You have a great show. You have a highly rated show, too, by the way, in case they haven't been telling you lately.
Good morning, Chris. You're my voice of hope.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Hey, good morning. How are you? Happy Friday. You have made it. Fast Eddie Chiazzo, happy to be with you this morning, sitting in for the great Chris DeGaulle, who will be back with us live on Monday. Never fear. Chris will be here. He'll be back behind the big microphone in the big chair. But today, you have me. So good morning, Victoria on the other side of the glass. And surprise, surprise.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Happy Friday.
Yes, we all made it. Thankfully, more classified documents found in Biden's garage next to his Corvette. Are you surprised? Yeah.
No. I don't know if you're asking me for a second.
That's the White House.
The audience. Yeah.
They confirmed Thursday a second batch of classified documents had been found in Joe Biden's garage. There, where's Corvette is? Vroom, vroom. I'm going to make this thing an EV, huh? That's right. Biden lawyers discovered the classified documents during a Wednesday search of his Delaware residences. Richard Sauber, the special counsel to the president, said in a statement, that's right, we have to hear from Joe Biden's lawyers first because I don't even know what's in them. I don't even know. Yeah. All right. So we've heard from his attorneys. There they are. Search of Biden's residence conducted after other classified documents discovered in the Penn Biden Center. Oh, we have plenty to get to on that. That's Biden's think tank down there in D.C. Lawyers announced the discovery of the first round of documents Monday, although they were originally found in November. We have some of the great audio coming up. Peter Ducey yesterday asked, classified documents next to your Corvette? What were you thinking? The president defended himself. It's in a locked garage, so it's not like sitting out on the street. Oh, there's so much to get to. It was so funny. I don't know if you saw the absolute beating that Karine Jean-Pierre received, but so we'll get into some of that, and we'll unpack some of the more specifics. Also, a special counsel appointed to probe the situation by Attorney General Merrick Garland. So we have a lot to unpack today, do we not? But what about Donald Trump? What about Joe Biden? What aboutism? Merriam-Webster defines whataboutism as the act of responding to an accusation of wrongdoing by claiming that an offense committed by another is similar or worse. The left invokes the term quite frequently whenever Republicans counter the January 6th insurrection conversation to the, quote, civil unrest that rocked the country back in 2020. Back in 2020, you may remember the city of brotherly love had not one, but two moments of civil unrest in our fair city. That's right. The George Floyd protests in May of 2020 and the Walter Wallace Jr. protests in October of 2020. Now, these quoted protests or civil unrest, I called them the Philly riots. That's what they were. Well, the Philly riots caused a whole lot of destruction to our city. Police officers were injured because they dealt with the madness for 48 straight hours without a plan from Commissioner Danielle Outlaw or Mayor Jim Kenney. National Guard was eventually called in, but the damage had already been done. Jim Kenney and other officials, they couldn't see what was happening in Minneapolis, Portland, or Atlanta, which I remember watching live, what was happening at CNN. They couldn't imagine that happening here in Philadelphia, so They just weren't prepared for it. Nope. You'll have to remember also, this was at the time when the citizens were supposed to be staying 6 feet apart from one another, wearing masks, stay indoors, stay safe. But the Democrat leaders thought these protests were just too damn important to do that. They found out quickly they couldn't force the rioters to do that. So what about, Eddie, what about the Philly riots? Former city controller Rebecca Reinhart, now she's a mayoral candidate, she released her independent investigation of the damage done. You ready? 72 police vehicles vandalized, 104 police officers injured or assaulted. Total cost to the city in damages was $21 million. But what about? What about January 6th? What was the cost of January 6th in damages to the city of Washington, D.C.? Well, the architect of the Capitol, J. Brett Blanton, said to NPR in February of 2021, "The events of January 6th were difficult for the American people and extremely hard for all of us on campus to witness." Blanton said the congressional appropriations committees have already approved a transfer request of $30 million to pay for expenses and extend a temporary perimeter fencing contract through March 31st. That was 2021, if you'll recall, when Nancy Pelosi had our troops in the National Guard. They were sleeping in parking garages just in case another insurrection sprung up again. Bravo. Aren't you glad Congress swooped in and saved the Capitol with your tax dollars to the tune of $30 million or more? It might be more by now. Funny, though, because I didn't think that was necessary, because on January 6th, the big day itself, January 6th, 2021, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, well, she said they were absolutely prepared. Bowser said, "We prepare for First Amendment demonstrations all the time, and our Metropolitan Police Department is, quote, on it." Do you remember this?
Let me ask you first about those rallies that Peter was just talking about. A group assembled today in support of President Trump in your city. We saw some scuffles last night between some groups and police there. Are you prepared for what may be coming today?
We're absolutely prepared. We're especially prepared for the Congress doing its job, affirming the Electoral College and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris becoming the next president and vice president of the United States and turning to the page on this Trump era. We, of course, prepare for First Amendment demonstrations all the time in Washington, D.C.
Our
Metropolitan Police Department is on it. We have the support of our D.C. National Guard. We have support of our neighbors, and we're very prepared to have a peaceful protest.
National Guard.
The president, in a tweet recently, said it will be wild, talking about today's events in Washington, encouraging his supporters to come to town. What is unique about this gathering, and do you expect violence?
Well, I think it's unfortunate that the president himself has incited violence. Other elected officials have incited violence. I will tell you another thing that our residents, I asked them a couple of days ago to stay out of the demonstration areas, that we don't have counter protests. Let people who are looking for confrontation and a fight, and unfortunately we saw some skirmishes between them and the police last night. We had several arrests related to that activity, but not a single one of them was a D.C. resident, because our residents are staying away, letting them have their protests, but our police are going to make sure that our laws follow.
Aha! Right, National Guard, we got it. Our D.C. police got it. Metropolitan PD, we're all good. All square on this end, don't you worry. So the Democrats were on it. I remind you again, Congress swooped in and repaired the city to the tune of upwards $30 million, right? Right. So what about? What about Philly, Eddie? Well, I'm glad you asked. Let's go back to March 26th, 2021. Samantha Melamed from The Inquirer tweeted, Philly's DA and defense lawyers have put forward a novel restorative justice plan to resolve criminal cases stemming from last year's civil unrest. The plan, simply put, is to have accountability without the necessity for convictions. Oh, yay! Accountability without convictions. Her piece in the Inquirer reads, on a February morning in a courtroom armored with plexiglass shields meant to stem the spread of the virus, Philadelphia prosecutors offered updates on hundreds of cases that lawyers said challenge basic ideas about how justice is served. On the one hand, the victims, small business owners and big corporate chains alike, had sustained millions of dollars in damage during last year's uprising against police brutality. On the other, the accused perpetrators were so impoverished, virtually all qualified for public defenders, meaning they'd likely never be able to pay restitution. So the district attorney's charging unit supervisor, Leandra Ritacco, was sorting cases into two piles. She requested preliminary hearing dates for prosecution on charges like blowing up ATMs or committing the sort of premeditated burglary that involves renting a U-Haul. For about 80% of the cases, she said, the DA will be offering a program called Civil Unrest Restorative Response, which lawyers on both sides hope will make the community whole, while avoiding prosecution for more than 500 people, a majority of whom had no prior arrests. The initiative, which has been gestating for 9 months, did not come into the world easily. It will be Philadelphia's first attempt at a restorative model for adult offenders. And it's an extraordinarily complex rookie effort. More than 900 businesses were damaged or burglarized in the unrest in May and June. By the city's count, about 250 suffered similar losses in October after the police shooting of Walter Wallace Jr. in West Philadelphia. I already told you the city controller found the damages to be $21 million to the city of Philadelphia. Well, Ritacco said those being considered for the restorative response were accused of conduct like fleeing Rite Aid with a lot of makeup, being inside a closed GameStop, running a human assembly line, passing merchandise out of Walgreens, caught being in a closed Snipes sneaker store with more than 100 other people, many of whom escaped. Damage recounted in court was dizzying. 7 footlockers were cleared out, lost millions of dollars, $800,000 in losses from the clothing retailer Live in Color, and numerous stores that never reopened after the unrest. District Attorney Larry Krasner said a creative response was warranted given the unique motivation of the crimes, an outcry during a historic moment of protest against the police killing of George Floyd. That's his response. Aha, so you see, this was a historic moment. For January 6th, Congress dished out $30 million immediately, but in Philly, during this historic moment that caused, quote, numerous stores to never reopen, there was some time. Deliberation needed to happen after months and months and months without a resolution. It wasn't until March of 2021, prosecutors, they were ready to respond to this historic moment. And you want to know what old Larry came up with? Quote, the plan, simply put, is to have accountability without the necessity for convictions. The plan is to make sure that as best we can, the defendants and the defense satisfy their obligations to the people they harmed, which includes some small business owners, many of them business owners of color. The plan is also not to repeat the mistakes of the past. That's Larry's response. Those mistakes, he said, include failing victims on restitution and embroiling too many poor people in the justice system. Hello, John Fetterman. So which was it in this case, Larry? Did you embroil too many poor people in the justice system, or did you fail the victims on restitution? We all know the answer to that now, don't we? You guessed it. He failed the victims, as he always does. One North Philadelphia business owner whose losses exceeded $150,000 in property damage and stolen inventory said the plodding pace of the legal system has been matched only by the reluctance of his insurance company. So there goes the argument of it's fine to destroy businesses, especially the big ones, for they have insurance, you see. Justice. That is the dumbest argument I've heard justifying the Philly riots, by the way, and riots everywhere across the country. They have insurance. Don't worry about it. We can destroy them. They'll get it back. No, they won't. Actually, I know specifically Walgreens left in 2022. More than one, I think. So the only money this business owner, this North Philadelphia business owner, specifically received was a $10,000 grant from the Merchants Fund. He declined to be named for fear of being targeted again. Quote, "I feared for my life," he said, as he guarded the store to prevent further losses. Now he feels abandoned by the city. He learned about the restorative justice proposal from a reporter and took offense to it. "Why should they get a pass?" he says. "They were all old enough. They knew what they were doing. If I can help it, no. You committed a crime, you have to pay for it." "What about your business in North Philadelphia, Mr. Business Owner?" "Yeah, what about it?" $10,000 in the form of a grant just isn't going to cut it when you lose $150,000 in property damage. And that's the point. The math doesn't add up. The total resolution was the city and the Merchants Fund distributing more than $1.5 million in grants to 186 affected businesses. March 21, the city and the PIDC awarded a second round of grants totaling $12 million. That was to 914 restaurants and gyms affected by the pandemic, 71 damaged due to the unrest. Let me get my handy calculator here. Okay. All right, got it. Math on the air. The city of Philadelphia took on $21 million in damages. The businesses here received a total of $13.5 million. That's some Philadelphia math for you folks. But what about the people who caused the damages? Yeah, what about them? About the looters and the rioters that destroyed the city? Well, funny you ask. Khalif Miller, 27-year-old, Southwest Philadelphia, he cut a deal with prosecutors to avoid a federal arson charge when he torched a cop car. 7-year mandatory minimum sentence it carries, wiped away. He pleaded guilty to one count of obstructing law enforcement during a civil disorder with a maximum sentence of 5 years, and also pleaded guilty to one count of illegal gun possession tied to a cache of weapons federal agents found while searching his home during the arrest. Ah, sounds like a good person. But he was able to avoid that federal prosecution, the 7-year mandatory minimum. So he got out, what? He gained a year. Miller describes himself as a political prisoner, and his trial starts this month. So we'll have to follow that closely. See, Khalif Miller is a political prisoner because the only two other defendants sentenced so far were Ayub Tabri, 25 years old, of Arlington, Virginia, and Laura Elizabeth Blumenthal, 35 years old, of Jenkintown. They were each charged with torching cop cars and serving punishments of 364 days for Tabri and 2.5 years for Blumenthal. But they put people's lives in danger, Eddie! Yeah, they did. But no sweat, all right? Justice has been served, I can assure you. So what about the 500 people arrested from the Philly riots? Yeah, what about them? Ah, no big deal. They're covered. They're covered under Larry Krasner's civil unrest restorative response. They won't be prosecuted. Actually, this reminds me of that Office Space clip, how the bosses deal with Milton. They say, yeah, we fixed the glitch, so he won't be receiving a paycheck, so that'll just work itself out. So Larry Krasner says, hey, these 500 people that were all brought into my office or brought into the court, yeah, don't worry. Restorative justice, that'll work itself out. Yeah. Where was Josh Shapiro in all this, by the way? The Attorney General. I know McSwain was involved because the Yankee hit him almost hourly with trying to campaign off of, like, that he stopped the Philly riots. So anyway, I just gave you the stats on Philadelphia alone. So I ask, what about January 6th? To date, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., more than 950 defendants have been arrested in nearly all 50 states and the District of Columbia. This includes those charged in both district and superior court. D.C. being a progressive city with surely a progressive D.A., these 950 will be able to avoid federal charges just like the rioters in Philly, right? Well, you tell me. Let's take an example of a Philadelphian there at the Capitol riot on January 6th. Philadelphia resident Zachary Real, described in court documents as the president of the local chapter of the Proud Boys, faces multiple charges, including seditious conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, and destruction of government property. His trial started yesterday. Real and other defendants, I think there are four or five others, one of them being that Enrique Tarrio. So Real and whatever, the four or five, six other defendants, they were part of this first wave of rioters to push onto Capitol grounds and charge past police barricades toward the Capitol building. Real's a former Marine, and if convicted of seditious conspiracy, will face a minimum of 20 years in prison. How have the other January 6ers fared so far? Funny you ask, what about them? Just over a month ago, November 29th, a jury convicted two leaders of the Oath Keepers with seditious conspiracy. Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes and Florida chapter leader Kelly Meggs. Rhodes is expected to be sentenced in April. He'll face a maximum of 60 years in prison for seditious conspiracy and the two other charges on which he was convicted, obstructing an official proceeding and destroying evidence. 60 years. Expect the same fate for Philadelphian Zachary Real. Whataboutism? What about three people who torched Philly during the riots, receiving less than 10 years in prison, avoiding federal charges, and one person who torched the Capitol, most likely receiving 60 years. 500 plus rioters in Philly let off the hook in Philly to face no charges. 950 plus rioters in D.C. facing the absolute maximum charges, some of whom will do more time in federal prison for literally just taking a walk on the street that day. You better believe there's a two-tiered system of justice, and you better believe that if you are a conservative and you break the law, you will be destroyed. You're dealing with political justice and revenge like you've never experienced before. Think Obama targeting the Tea Party through the IRS was bad? Whoo boy, saddle up, hunker down, because you've seen nothing yet. If your business was torched and you lost everything, Democrats don't care. If someone in your family was murdered by a violent criminal on the streets, Democrats don't care. If you took a walk on the street leading up to the Capitol, Democrats do care. It's Democrat justice, baby, and it's playing out in all Democrat-run cities nationwide. Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., they're just a microcosm. It's federal now, and if the DOJ handles the Joe Biden documents drastically different than the way they handled Donald Trump's, and the outcomes aren't the same, like the rioters who torched Philly versus the January 6th rioters, well, if Trump goes down and Biden doesn't, then it's undeniable. It doesn't matter what color you are, what religion you practice. If you're a conservative and the Republicans don't start winning elections, then this two-tiered system of justice will be final. The next time a leftist talks to you about January 6th and you encounter what happened to your friends, you know, and your family, you counter with this, okay? You take what I've just said, counter with this. If they shout back to you, whataboutism? Whataboutism? You best believe it. You lay out the case I just laid out here, look them dead in the eye, and say, yeah, what about it? So we're going to get to the Merrick Garland announcement. Yes, we have a big show for you today. 6:29 on Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. Fast Eddie Chiazzo in for Chris. 610-850-0990 if you want to get in. 610-850-0990.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle. Only on Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer.
I'm here today to announce the appointment of Robert Herr as a special counsel pursuant to Department of Justice regulations governing such matters. In keeping with those regulations, I have today notified the designated members of each House of Congress of the appointment. I'm joined today by John Lausch, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, who conducted the initial investigation into the matter that I will describe today. On the evening of November 4th, 2022, the National Archives Office of Inspector General contacted a prosecutor at the Department of Justice. It informed him that the White House had notified the archives that documents bearing classification markings were identified at the office of the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, located in Washington, D.C. That office was not authorized for storage of classified documents.
Back on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, Fast Eddie Chiazzo in the big chair for Chris today. Chris will again be back with you on Monday. Don't miss it. But now, breaking news. Attorney General Merrick Garland, he appoints the special counsel to now investigate the Biden classified documents. White House lawyers found another stash of classified documents at Biden's home in Delaware. So this is getting serious. We bring in Larry Klayman, author of the book It Takes a Counter-Revolution, Wake Up America. He's also the founder of Judicial Watch and current chairman of Freedom Watch. Larry, welcome back to the program.
You're welcome, Fast Eddie. How are you? I had an Uncle Eddie many years ago in Philadelphia. I'm from Philadelphia as well. Good old Uncle Eddie.
That's right. You are a Philly guy.
Yeah, I'm a Philly guy, and there's Phillies involved in this latest scandal, isn't it? The University of Pennsylvania. Fortunately, I chose to go to Duke University, not go to the University of Pennsylvania.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's where So I guess let's get to it. The first batch of documents. So University of Penn had this Penn Biden Center set up for Professor Joe Biden down there in Washington, D.C., and well, wouldn't you know it, they found some classified documents from his time as vice president. So now we come to find, not too far after we find that out, there's a second batch of documents down there in Delaware. So can you help make sense of some of this for me?
And there's a third. It just came out.
Oh, good.
Backing up a little bit, it's clear that the University of Pennsylvania was used as a Hunter Biden-type laundering operation to pump money into the Biden family from China, from communist China. That's clear. This is a huge, huge scandal. That's the good news, so to speak. We don't want scandals, but this is what it is. The bad news is that by appointing a special counsel, this is a technique that's been used by Republican and Democrat administrations, their Justice Department. They take the evidence off the market. They make it impossible almost for the public to know what is going on because they're going to claim a criminal investigation is underway. Mm-hmm. Former special counsel investigations, when they've indicted anyone, wound up indicting lower-level people or middle-level people. You might remember Cheney with what went on with Valerie Plame, alleged leak of classified information as well. They indicted Scooter Libby, his chief of staff, and Cheney walked off scot-free. Same thing, you know, with Democrats. So the bottom line is Woody Allen parodied in his movie Bananas.
All right.
The special counsel is a travesty of a mockery of a travesty of two mockeries of a sham of a travesty. And, of course, the media is going to play it up big because it brings in ratings and everything else.
Sure.
But what we're doing at Freedom Watch, this is one of the things that you can read about in my book, It Takes a Counter-Revolution, Wake Up America, that you can get at freedomwatchusa.org or all major booksellers. We as citizens have the right to commission our own grand jury. Justice Antonin Scalia in 1992, in an opinion, United States versus Williams, found that the grand jury belongs to the American people, not the three branches of government. We have the right to indict, to try, to seek convictions, and to carry out those sentences. And we've been doing that with Biden, with bribery from communist China, Ukraine, and Russia. Now, as far as Congress is concerned, they're going to play this up big, too, with McCarthy. Oh, we're going to have hearings. We're going to do this, that. Number one, people don't realize that Congress has no authority to indict. Only a Biden Justice Department, which has been turned into a Gestapo, particularly with regard to January 6th peaceful protesters and parents of school board meetings that get investigated.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen. So this basically, you know, and I hate to throw water, you know, in what appears to be a major event.
Sure.
Is that unless the American people hold Biden accountable, and he is a criminal, there's no doubt, there isn't going to be justice here. But here's the strange twist, is the Democrats probably will be happy if Biden can't run again in 2024. And with the way things are going these days, with these mail-in ballots and the fraud that's out there, the Democrats are the masters at that. I'm throwing a lot at you, Fast Eddie.
Yes.
I know you're fast because your name is Fast Eddie. is that my prediction today, remember it.
All right.
2 years from now, Gavin Newsom will be the next president of the United States with the fraudulent electoral system that we currently have.
Oh,
Biden will not run again. But we're going to have him for another 2 years. And isn't it ironic that this guy gets a Biden Center at the University of Pennsylvania when he is the master of plagiarism, is brain dead, and frankly, his IQ is below average.
Well, we're speaking with Larry Klayman, author of It Takes a Counter-Revolution, Wake Up America, current chairman of Freedom Watch. And I want you to get into some of the nuts and bolts, some of the things we're seeing playing out here. But it's funny you brought that up with Joe Biden, because if you'll remember, I said yesterday, Kamala Harris was the first. She was the person handpicked by Barack Obama and Susan Rice to be the president. They thought she was going to ride it all the way through. She ended up getting booted in the first round in the Democrat primary there. So I thought maybe this was a way. We're thinking along the same lines. I thought this was a way to ascend Kamala to the throne, because we know that she would absolutely lose in 2024. So I think Gavin Newsom's going to be the candidate as well. But I think that if they follow through with this, and you can let me know if they can, if they're able to, that it's Kamala who gets the Oval Office.
Well, you may be right, but whether she wins or not is another story. But we can't survive another 2 years with Joe Biden. This country's already on its back. We're gasping for air. The guy's destroyed the economy. He's opened the floodgates to crime, to people running across the border with disease, human traffickers, drug traffickers, and, of course, fentanyl. Demoralized the military with what's going on in Afghanistan. And we can't survive another 2 years. That's the bottom line. And this is why I ask people, because in the last cycle, the Republicans siphoned off a lot of contributions, particularly to public interest groups like ours. Mm-hmm. We need the help financially. We need to get bigger. We are your Justice Department at Freedom Watch. And I hope people will contribute with tax-deductible contributions at freedomwatchusa.org. I know that's a plug, but we need it. Freedomwatchusa.org, and go to our website and see what we're doing, because we have the right to try these criminals. We have the right to clean out the infestation of cockroaches in Washington, D.C., which is what they are. And the Republicans play the game. I'm a registered Republican, but I criticize it from within. They play the game of telling the American people that they can accomplish things that, A, legally they can't, and B, when they've assumed power and had all three branches of government, they've done little to nothing. They haven't balanced the budget. They didn't reform Obamacare in any major way. They didn't give us clarion calls on what was going to happen in Afghanistan and Ukraine. And they play this game jingling money while at the same time telling the American people with, you know, McCarthy, who in fact CNN and MSNBC were supporting. Mm-hmm. Because McCarthy said he'll never impeach Biden. No, he's not going to do that. He's part of this Washington establishment club. So he was actually put in power in large part by the urgings of CNN and MSNBC, in addition to Fox News, which is very establishment.
In the first batch of documents discovered, there were papers regarding the Ukraine, Iran, and there was one other country, I believe.
It was United Kingdom,
okay.
China, and Ukraine.
Okay, so those were the three.
Bingo on two. Ukraine, China, bribery, wander through Hunter Biden. There was no accident that he took those documents. No accident.
So now this second batch of documents, and then you mentioned the third. Where do we stand?
The third. We don't know what's in them.
Gotcha.
We don't know what's in them. And, you know, you've got this press secretary coming out there and saying, oh, I can't say anything. It's under investigation. That's not true. They can say whatever they want to say or whatever they're willing to say. And you even see, I've been watching it, you know, as we've been on the air.
Sure.
Even a reporter from CBS, if you can believe that, is calling them a bunch of liars. It's just unbelievable.
Well, that's
because
that's why they trotted Garland out there first. I think they put Merrick Garland out there first in front of it because they knew this briefing was scheduled and they knew KJP wasn't going to be able to handle it. So they throw him out there first. Now she says, oh, well, I can't talk about it. It's classified. I can't talk about it. It just like the same thing. What would Biden say the first day or in Mexico when he was asked about it? He's like, well, you know, I don't even know what the documents are. I have to talk to my lawyers. We can't. Again, that's why Karine Jean-Pierre was thrown out there.
Yeah, that's his best defense. I'm brain dead. I don't remember anything. Okay, yeah. That's his defense. Okay. The fact is, at the time he took it, he wasn't brain dead. He wasn't in the condition that he's in today, number one. Number two,
good point.
Merrick Garland did Biden a favor. This is not any great act by Merrick Garland. By, as I said, by appointing a special counsel, it now takes all of the incriminating evidence out of the public domain. Jim Jordan, the committee, will get no documents. They wouldn't have gotten any anyway. Yeah. And they can't enforce any subpoenas because only the Biden Gestapo of the Justice Department can do that. But now they have an excuse. So everything will be subject to a criminal investigation. When I ran Judicial Watch, which I founded, and we were looking into the Chinagate scandal where the Clintons were being bribed by the Chinese. Sound familiar?
Yep.
Every excuse when we would subpoena documents. Oh, it's under criminal investigation. We can't give it to you. So this is a game that's played in Washington by both parties when they're in power. The special counsel works as a way to shield the administration from scrutiny by the public. And then it goes on for years. People lose interest. American people lose interest,
yes,
like they did with the Clintons. And it just dies a slow death. And that's the game that's played in Washington. In the meantime, Fox News gets to play it up, and they bring in ratings. They make money.
Yeah.
CNN, the Communist News Network, and MSNBC do the same. And it's a cash cow for the media. That's what it is.
So then your prediction, they obviously raided Donald Trump's home for classified documents. Now, even though they've had these documents, the first batch, since November that they knew about it, they didn't really raid anywhere else. It was more peaceful, I guess we'll say. So Donald Trump on one end, the aggressive, the special counsel, you know, he could go down and be charged. No one is above the law. And then you have Biden where it's just like, oh, no, like this is the process. We spoke to the records keepers. We're fully in compliance. We're going to deal with this head on. So what are the two scenarios? What do you think happens with Trump and what do you think happens with Biden?
The good news is, see, Trump was president. He had the ability to declassify. Biden was not president. He could not declassify and take documents.
Okay.
The good news is that Trump's off the hook. He's off the hook with regard to him taking the documents. They're not going to do that for political reasons now. They can't. They'll try to indict him on January 6th, or they'll indict him on tax-related matters. His accountant already went to prison for 8 months, I think it is, 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, that's right.
He's not guilty of anything in that regard, but that doesn't matter to this Justice Department. They'll indict him anyway, because now Trump has some oxygen, and this increases his ability to run again for president. So mark my words, the Democrats will indict Trump on something.
Wow.
Biden will be indicted for nothing. And, you know, again, go to freedomwatchusa.org. Please contribute to our cause. We need your help. We need more lawyers. We need more space, office space, etc. But Fast Eddie, what I'm saying is they won't indict either of them on the documents issue. Okay.
Okay.
They won't indict Trump on the documents issue now that they would be forced to otherwise indict their own president, Biden.
Yeah.
And the American people are so uneducated, except for people that listen to your show and Chris's show and our supporters. My point is that we got to get rid of Biden and Harris now,
yeah,
peacefully and legally, because we will not survive another 2 years with these people. You know, already the country's been destroyed. It's never been worse in our 230-some-year history than it is today. You know, go back to our Philadelphia, 1776, July 4th. The colonies were prosperous. The colonies were not on their knees economically. There was not rampant crime. The offenses of the king were far less worse than the offenses of Biden and Harris with their edicts and their executive orders. And we have a Republican Party, which is, you know, is not really any opposition at all. You know, it's there to raise money and to allegedly acquire power. And then it tells the American people we can do X, Y, Z when they can't and when they don't. So we are on our own right now, the American people, like our founding fathers were on July 4, 1776.
We're speaking with Larry Klayman. It Takes a Counter-Revolution. Wake Up America is the new book. Larry, thanks so much for your time today.
FreedomWatchUSA.org. Thanks, Fast Eddie.
6:48 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. If you want to weigh in on the Biden docs, please give me a call. 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990. I'm Fast Eddie, in for Chris on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Now, more of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
.com 6:54 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Fast Eddie Chiazzo in with you today for Chris. Chris will be back live Monday, so don't miss it. A big show for you today. At 7 o'clock, we have Kathy Barnett. She wants to give you an update on some of the things she's been up to. Sherry Few, the president and founder of United States Parents Involved in Education, and E.J. Antoni at 8:30 is going to go over these CPI numbers. So stick around. You're not going to want to miss it. 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990 if you'd like to talk to me. And, oh, how about this? Some of what Larry Klayman was just talking about, Penn Biden Center, where classified papers were found, is a dark money nightmare. Ivy League think tank, where lawyers found classified materials linked to the Obama White House, is a patronage mill for the Biden administration, raising suspicions among critics that its establishment attracted tens of millions in donations from anonymous Chinese donors. That in the New York Post. And we have more of this to get into. I have another story. Hunter Biden lived at the Biden home, where classified documents were stashed. Records show. And Biden did address this yesterday. So I guess let's get into some of that audio. Chris calls him the husk. How did he respond to Peter Ducey when he asked about it?
The incredible husk.
The incredible husk. Sorry.
Classified material next to your Corvette. What were you thinking?
I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay? So it's not like you're sitting out in the street. But anyway.
It was in a locked garage.
Yes, as well as my Corvette. But as I said earlier this week, people know I take classified documents and classified material seriously. I also said we're cooperating fully and completely with the Justice Department's review. As part of that process, my lawyers reviewed other places where documents from my time as vice president were stored, and they finished the review last night. They discovered a small number of documents of classified markings in storage areas and file cabinets in my home and my personal library. This was done in the case of the Biden Penn. This was done in the case of the Biden Penn Center.
He's reading.
The Department of Justice. Was immediately, as was done, the Department of Justice was immediately notified.
Yeah, he's still reading.
And the lawyers arranged for the Department of Justice to take possession of the document. So you're going to see, we're going to see all this unfold. I'm confident.
You can stop there. Victoria, I wanted to get to the phones. 610-850-0990 to speak with me. First, let's go to Sean in Queens. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, Eddie. Mega harumph.
Harumph to you, sir. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, my man. Great job yesterday. Loving the show this morning.
Thank you, Sean.
I've been listening to hours and hours and hours of talking heads and pundits and, you know, on talk radio and the media, and they're all saying the same thing. But there's one major question not being asked about this entire situation. Were those documents ever properly logged and secured by NARA? If they were, you see where I'm going, right? If they were, how did Joe Biden take them out of the National Archive? Because Sandy Berger, we all know who Sandy Berger is. Sandy Berger was Bill Clinton's national security advisor. He literally stuffed documents from NARA into his pants to steal them and destroy them. So we have to start asking this question at some point. Were those documents properly logged and secured by NARA after the Obama administration left office? I heard Andy McCarthy and Jonathan Turley. They were all saying things like, you know, maybe he had the documents because he was writing a memoir. Okay, right, but we know that's not true. We know that's not true because Biden said already he doesn't know anything about these documents and where they came from. So you can take that memoir thing out of the equation now. We have to start asking that very simple question. Were these documents ever secured by NARA? If so, who came and took them from NARA? And nobody's asking that question, Eddie. I'm not a prolific writer, but I started a Substack, Sean's Substack, and I'm taking my, you know, I'm just kind of throwing things out there, my thoughts.
Nice.
And I put this out there in my Substack already. And the title is called About Those Biden Documents. A lot is being said, but not being asked about. You know,
okay.
So, I mean, I just, people aren't asking that very simple question because NARA was lauded as heroes. Those librarians were lauded as heroes when they went after the documents that Trump had at Mar-a-Lago. Everybody
right,
kept saying, oh, my God.
I got to run. I'm up against the clock, Sean. But no, that's a great point. Thank you. Thanks for listening, Sean. Have a great weekend. All right. So again, we really are up against it. I'm Fast Eddie Chiazzo filling in for Chris DeGaulle. He'll be back with you Monday. Lots ahead. Stay tuned on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. WNTP Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for doing what you're doing in the media.
Good morning, Chris. I listen to you every morning. Thanks.
Mr. Segal, may he whose father gave us life keep you well and safe.
You saw the photograph of the top secret documents laid out on the floor at Mar-a-Lago. What did you think to yourself, looking at that image?
How that could possibly happen? How anyone could be that irresponsible? And I thought, what data was in there that may compromise sources and methods? By that, I mean names of people who helped, or et cetera. And it's just totally irresponsible.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Good morning and welcome. Fast Eddie Chiazzo sitting in for Chris today. Chris will be back with you live on Monday. Never fear. 610-850-0990 is the number to get in. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. And a special treat today on the line. Candidate for U.S. Senate in 2022, now the national spokeswoman for 1776 Action, Kathy Barnett. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
For sure. And first things first, we haven't spoken in a little while, so catch us up. You have a lot of supporters in this audience. I know I would like to hear about what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, you know, and we have more that is coming. But for right now, let me just say this Saturday, tomorrow, actually, I am hosting my first food drive. We will be at 1010 Cottman Avenue in Philadelphia. That's Northeast Philadelphia.
Excellent.
And we have about 6 pallets of food. And for those who are in need, please come. No obligations. We will give that right to you. And for those who want to come and help us distribute the food, please come on Monday of next week. I think, yes, you were at one of the events we did right before the midterm last year where we were talking about school boards. And so this year, I'm going to be all about school boards, jumping in, helping people where I can. I've learned a tremendous amount of information and strategies over these past 2 years, and I want to help us get the school board. So on Monday, I'm opening up on my website. You can go to kathybarnett.com, fill out a candidate application. My advice Jeffrey team and I, we will be going through those applications, and we're going to select those particular school board races where we can come alongside, add some benefit, hopefully, and get them across the line. So go to KathyBarnett.com. On Monday, it becomes live, and we will be accepting applications.
Yeah, Kathy, you're right. We just saw each other right before the midterms there, and wow. I mean, on display, some of the things that you were showing, the inappropriate content that leftists, especially here locally, seem to be wanting to make a part of our kids' school day. Where are we, would you say, on this fight against CRT? And I'm just going to say it, the flat-out sexualization of our children.
It is. It's pornographic. I mean, you came in. I mean, even when I'm gone, Ed, make sure you tell people, describe to them a little bit of what we saw. I brought these very large posters. I think we had about 8 or 10 of them. And I had a gallery that was roped out from children because it's pornographic and you don't want your children walking in there. And so I had it roped off so children could not go in. And I had every single adult who came to this rally that I put on right before the midterm election to go and look at these photos. These are large photos, images of what is already inside of our schools. And it's pornographic. It is sexual. I mean, I can't even describe it on radio and it may cut you off, but it is so horrible that this is what we have allowed. We have allowed because for whatever the reason, right? Because we're busy, because, you know, we want to leave it to the professionals to teach our children, because we don't want to be shamed, canceled, or marginalized. I don't know what the reason is why parents have not just risen up all over this nation, and specifically here in Pennsylvania, to say, not my child and not on my watch. And so, as I said then, I continue to say now, these schools, we cannot lose this battle. I know on the Republican side, we're kind of used to losing at this point, but this is not a battle we can lose. These are our children. And so the battle rages on, and these people are completely unapologetic. Even now, we're hearing about children going off to Alice in Wonderland drag queen show. There is no reason why a drag queen should be anywhere near our children. It's the equivalent of me saying, let me give you a porn star to influence your children. Who would be okay with that? You have men dressed up like women, typically in a club setting, dancing provocatively, sexually. We've seen videos of little children putting dollar bills into the G-strings of drag queen. And we call that progress. That is not. That is filth. And every single parent, you need to get involved. You need to get involved in these school boards. Look around you. Should you run, go to KathyBarnett.com. and fill out that application. And if you're one of the ones that we decide our resources can assist, we will be right there standing with you.
And Kathy, that what you brought up is so important. I think you were referencing the story from Malvern, it's so deceptive, these things that happen. So if you're a parent, your kid's in school, they bring home a permission slip to see this Alice in Wonderland show that, you know, that the school or these classes go to every year, but it's deceptive. So you sign that permission slip. Nowhere in sight is what the contents of that show is going to be. Who is playing the part? I think that's the one you were speaking about, right?
Yes. And so it wasn't on the permission slip itself. And then children, so they go to this field trip to go see Alice in Wonderland performance. Your kid come back home and says, Mom, it was a drag queen version of Alice in Wonderland. And you're incensed. You call the school. And then the school says, oh, you should have gone to the school's website. We disclosed it there. Right? Extremely deceptive, right? And so this is the world in which we're living in. We now have, it's not conspiracy theories any longer, that we now have teachers who have come out on record who have said that they are being specifically directed not to share certain information about our children to us, the parent, right? Whether or not your child is coming to school and telling the teachers that, I know I look like a girl on the outside, but I'm really a boy, so I want you to call me, I want you to use the he pronoun, this is my boy name. I mean, these things are happening. And so, you know, if my child is struggling on their identity of all things, right? I mean, my husband and I, we have worked very hard to create an environment where we can raise strong, healthy children. And so if something is, you know, if our child is struggling in some way, I don't want a stranger advising my child. My husband and I would do that. Thank you very much.
I get, and that's what's so frustrating, Kathy. And we're speaking to Kathy Barnett, candidate for U.S. Senate in 2022. Now national spokeswoman for 1776 Action, excuse me, KathyBarnett.com. That's what's so frustrating. It's as if the left wants to just bypass parents. Like, these conversations that some of the teachers and some of the school administrators are having with children, can you... Like, I just remember, like, my son, he's almost 2 years old, so he's young. But I remember when my goddaughter was going into school, and she, if anyone spoke to her the way that some of these teachers speak to these kids, I probably would be behind bars. It's what makes it acceptable now, whereas it wasn't, what makes it acceptable now, whereas it wasn't when we were growing up? You know, don't talk to strangers. Don't get in the van with people. They're having disgusting conversations with it, and I don't know how it's accepted.
You know, even as you're talking now, I'm thinking about one of the billboards that we had there on display for parents in that rally that I did right before the election. And one of them is a book that is in our children's school, a library that is recommended, that is on the recommended reading list. It's called Push. And Oprah did a movie out of it called Precious. And it tells this very graphic story of this little girl who is being raped by her father. And it talks about when he is raping her, how she goes into, you know, this other state of being where she pretends she's on different stages dancing and being applauded. And then I can't even get into the graphics of it all, but yeah. It begins to describe in very graphic terms how she starts enjoying it with her father, and how her father says, see, you like, this is the kind of foolishness. This is filth. This is not education. Do they even know what the capital of Iowa is? If they don't know what the capital of Iowa is, why are they reading this? Have we learned every other good thing that there is to learn? Every other wholesome thing, every other productive thing that we can now come over here and begin to educate our children on pronouns and other foolishness? I say no. I say it's filth, and I say it is intentional. This is very intentional. This is not by osmosis. This is not something that is happening organically. This is extremely intentional, and these are your children. I can't possibly care more about your children than you do. And as I've said to many school boards, they don't care more about my children than I do, right? Why do they think they care more about the health and well-being of my child, especially during this COVID, all these COVID mandates? Why do they think they care more about my children than I do, right? And so we just got to start standing up as parents and saying, no, go to your child's website, school website, the calendar is right there. You can see when the school board are meeting. You can go put your name on a piece of paper when you get there saying you want 3 minutes to speak and have your write it out, do whatever you need to do, bring a little posse with you for moral support, and start speaking up.
Yep, we're speaking with Kathy Barnett. So I have just two more things for you before you run. Central Bucks, have you seen anything happening over there in the Central
Bucks
School
watching.
District.
I am watching, right? I mean, I'm so proud of those in Bucks County. You know, I travel all over the state of Pennsylvania, 1,500 miles a week in those last 3 to 4 months of that race, and I met a lot of people. And Central Bucks, I mean, it is just something very special about these particular mothers primarily, but dads too. But these moms and dads, they're like, no, we're not going to wait for the PAGOP to get their head out of the sand. That's the Pennsylvania Republican Party to get their head out of the sand and advise us. But instead, we're going to do the hard work. They went into one of the most liberal of areas. They flipped the school board conservative, and they went in and they started implementing very common sense policies. Well, guess what? Now the ACLU is looking at them, and they're going to try this election to flip it back liberal. And these moms and dads, I mean, it's not just in Central Bus, but Central Bus happens to be the one under the spotlight right now. I mean, just amazing people. And so, again, if they want my assistance, whatever we can bring, I've learned a lot, people. I can help. So please go to KathyBarnett.com. And if I can assist, I will. This is my state. I love it. I told you guys, I wasn't leaving. Whereas the others, I said, if they win, you will never see. If they lose, you will never see them again. And if they win, you will never see them again. It is turning out to be prophecy. I was true. I was right on that. But I am here. This is my state. I love it. And I want to help.
Well, with your fellow candidates, sure. With John Fetterman, I think we will literally never see him again. I think he's going to get to his office, and we probably won't see him physically ever again.
Well, hopefully we learn some lessons. I mean, like, that's the only thing you can do at this point. Someone said to me, how are you able to just keep going and to just keep doing all that you're doing and putting yourself out there for all of us? And I said, because the alternative is depression. I mean, when you look at what is going on, when you look at these blood clots and it appears to be a derivative of these vaccines. You see, I'm listening to more and more of the stories of those who have been injured by the vaccine. Yeah. We're looking at people who were healthy and all was well, suddenly dropped dead of a heart attack or something. We're looking at an 80% miscarriage rate. I don't know if they're the straight line of correlation, but there's a lot of reports that are now coming out, and my heart just goes out to these people. I have a lot of friends, I have a lot of family members who took the vaccine, and so this is not a laughing matter. This is not a hashtag moment. These are very serious issues that are going on all around us, and so we need to be very mindful of that and keep the humanity in our conversations, right? We have a lot of things that they once called conspiracies that are no longer conspiracies, and we may have a tendency to want to gloat. Let's not gloat, but let's come alongside people and let's begin to do the hard work of battling for our neighbors' hearts and minds.
No, that's exactly right. There's nothing wrong with asking questions. All throughout the pandemic, we just asked questions, and even that was looked at as, had to be silenced, had to be censored. So you're absolutely right. Anybody that is all in, full, let's go all the way. I'm vaxxed, I'm boosted 20 times, and they want to have the conversation and they want the information. I'm fine. Like, I don't want anything bad to happen to them. It seems like when you ask questions, that people like that wanted something bad to happen to you. It's just like, no, we can have.
I mean, remember when they were saying to us, people actually coming out saying, if you have not gotten the vaccine or been boosted, then if you should get sick, you should not get immediate medical attention. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, I do. Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, how nasty is that, right?
Yep.
So you see that, but at some point, we got to stop with the tit for tat because we ain't winning, especially not on our side. We're not winning with these epic takedowns. But I said it back, when I was running, I say it today, we're in trouble as a country. And now we have, the classified documents for Biden. We have the Twittergate uncovering this massive collusion between the federal government against ordinary citizens. I mean, we're in trouble. We have China, we have Ukraine. we are in trouble as a nation. The fentanyl death, you know, the drug overdoses, it's at epidemic levels right now, breaking records. So, and then you have them trying to corrode our children's innocent minds. So we have to start looking for very real solutions. And this is my way of looking for solutions, starting with the grassroots, because that's who I am. I'm all about the people. And so we're going to start at the grassroots with these school boards and continue to work our way up. And so if you want to help us, if you want to help contribute to that, again, you can go to KathyBarnett.com. You can contribute to that. If you want to come alongside and help me give out food this Saturday from 12 to 2 p.m. at 1010 Cottman Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, please do.
And Kathy, was that the only one? Were you doing a string of these, the food drives upcoming?
I am. Yep. And then the following week on September 21st, I'm doing another food drive. You know, it's the Chinese New Year. So I will again be at 1010 Cottman Avenue. It's the second highest population of Chinese Americans. And so there are a number of people who are just struggling right now. And for me, you know, I've said it on your show. You know, food and food insecurity is a really big issue for me. I still have very vivid memories as a little girl standing in front of an empty refrigerator, wondering where my next meal is going to come from. There's nothing so vulnerable as not having enough to eat. And so, again, this is just my way of giving back and hopefully meeting some really great people and providing a need in the process.
All right. If you want to meet Kathy Barnett tomorrow, bring a non-perishable food item up there to ABC Urgent Care, 1010 Cottman Avenue in Philly. 12 to 2 p.m. You'll be there. Kathy, it was so great catching up. Thanks for being on this morning.
Oh, thank you so much, Ed. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 725 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. All right. Your calls, 610-850-0990. If you have a reaction to Kathy Barnett, on with us just now, the Biden documents. I want to hear about it. 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. Fast Eddie Caiazzo, the executive producer of the show, in for Chris today, who will be back with you Monday. It's Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. On Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Fast Eddie Caiazzo in the big chair today. In for Chris. He will be back with you live on Monday, so don't miss it. And yeah, a little Lisa Marie Presley there. She passed away. Sad.
Suddenly.
Yeah, the only child, I believe. Yes, only child of Elvis Presley.
And Priscilla has two, technically. But yes, and she just made an appearance 2 days at the Golden Globes on the carpet, was being interviewed with her mom.
That's right. She
crazy.
She really loved that movie Elvis that came out. I thought she was a big fan of it, right?
Every interview I saw, to your point, and I saw it as well, we talked about Elvis. Sure. But she was so supportive of Austin Butler, and it was so cute because that's a big, and she understood the pressure he was under, you know? And every time you see an interview of them, you could tell they really were like this or must have bonded. And that's such a shame.
Wow.
For him too, you know?
I heard a story, Austin Butler, he studied that role for 2 years or something like that.
Yeah, I heard that.
See, the thing with that film, we did speak about this, I think it was last week, over the Christmas break, I finally caught up on some of the films that I've been wanting to watch, because I'm not as connected to cinema anymore, because it's all woke crap. So I said, all right, there are some movies that I wanted to see. My Nuna, as I called her, it was my grandmom, my dad's mom, she was a huge Elvis fan, so when she would watch me, you'd see, like, she had the Elvis pillow, the Elvis clock, the Elvis... All the memorabilia. So I grew up listening to his songs, and I finally saw. So I wanted to see Elvis that they made, Baz Luhrmann. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, the acting was terrific. The spectacle was really nice. It was a beautiful film.
It was a Baz Luhrmann film, you could tell.
So, but my problem is, like, I'm supposed to hate that Colonel guy, the guy played by Tom Hanks.
Colonel Parker.
The problem I had with Elvis is the spectacle was great, the acting was great, but I didn't really fall into the story that much. I feel like I didn't learn that much, if that makes sense.
To your point, I believe, I don't want, this is an insult. I enjoyed the movie. It's actually my favorite that I saw last year. It was kind of a little bit of all over the place. They didn't really go into depth into things. It was kind of just like points of his life, like the periods of his life very quickly. Entertaining, but I get what you're saying there. Yeah. And I have a weird connection. I'm a big fan of Elvis. My dad loves Elvis. And oddly, I didn't know this until people told me, my birthday, August 16th, is his death anniversary. So people always tell me, oh yeah, the king died on your birthday. Like, I'm like, thanks. It's really uplifting. But yeah, I mean, what a talent. And it's just such a shame for Priscilla. I mean, they lost her son, Brandon, Lisa Marie's son, passed away tragically by suicide 2 years ago. And apparently she really struggled with that. And they've had some tragedies in their families.
A lot of tragedy in that family.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, so rest in peace. Lisa Marie Presley died 54 suddenly, they said, after a hospitalization, the AP is saying here. 610-850-0990 is the number. Let's go to the phones. We have an anonymous caller. Oh, boy. It's a Friday. Happy Friday. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to thank you for bringing up Zach Real and the Proud Boys down in D.C. He's been in jail for over 20 months, and I think all he really did was trespassing. But if we could get some help to defend Zach, ZACH.com, I'd appreciate it, and thank you for shedding light on all the J6ers that are still in prison.
Yep, you got it. Happy Friday to you. Hope the weekend is enjoyed. Yep, his trial starts today, and it's just, after seeing all of the damage caused in Philadelphia at that time, like, you got to remember, well, if you're a business owner, you sure as hell remember, we lived that. We lived the civil unrest, as they called it. And then to see Krasner come up with this, just pretty much letting 500 people just go scot-free, and you have one of them saying that he's a political prisoner. It's just like, no, the J6ers are the political prisoners. There's some people that just took a walk on the Capitol or just happened to be there. I'm not saying people breaking the windows and the guy with the horns on the desk. I'm not saying that doesn't need to be prosecuted, of course, but it is. You have all the footage. Oh, by the way, Kevin McCarthy yesterday was asked about that, and he said he is going to release that footage. So we'll see if he even has the power to do that. But I wanted to get back to the Biden documents here. There was a lot happening yesterday in the press room, and some of this audio is just really good. Now, Victoria, it was actually you that recognized this, because I think I was in the other room and you had the TV on in front of you. You said, the White House wheels out John Kirby before Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday.
Yeah, I made the joke. I couldn't help myself, and immediately waves him right on, and he comes out. I'm like, they got to bring out the big guns for this, you know, because she's not cutting it lately.
Well, let's see. So it was Kristen Welker first from NBC. I'm sorry. Yeah, NBC's Kristen Welker. She asked the first question of Mr. John Kirby. Let's hear that.
For you, has there been an assessment about any potential national security risk of having these classified documents in the president's private think tank here in Washington and his home in Delaware?
That would be a question for the Justice Department, because they are conducting a review now. You saw that they've announced a special counsel. That issue would be for them to speak to.
Can you speak broadly to the national security?
No, he can't, Kristen.
About
sorry.
Classified documents in private spaces.
The president has spoken to how seriously he takes the handling of classified documents, and he, as somebody who's aware of the process myself, did exactly the right thing, which is to have them immediately turned over. And that's where this appropriately lies. And again, the Justice Department would be the place to go to answer your question.
Yeah, the president takes this very serious. Victoria, can you play that throwback from Joe Biden that we heard from 60 Minutes? He takes it very, very seriously. How could you?
You saw the photograph of the top secret documents laid out on the floor at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
What did you think to yourself looking at that image? How that could possibly happen? How anyone could be that irresponsible? And I thought, what data was in there that may compromise sources and methods? By that, I mean names of people who helped, or et cetera.
and just totally irresponsible.
Yeah, totally irresponsible. Yeah. This goes on, but enter, well, exit John Kirby. What is Chris calling the blow-dried John Kirby?
No idea, but I quick take on him. Sure. I think, honestly, I don't know about you, I think he'd be a better press secretary than KGP, whatever they call her.
Well,
like,
yeah.
You gotta give it to him. I mean, he's not great, but like he's better with his answers than she is.
No, that's exactly right. He's the one that they throw out there on Fox News when the administration ends up in situations like this. It's not KJ. You think KJP is going to go there in front of Brett Baer?
Absolutely not. Mark McCallum? Nope.
So how do you defend the president now having documents of his own? I'm not going to speak to that. And Attorney General Merrick Garland's already come out, and we can't. This is an ongoing investigation. But it's funny. We finally do get the show. Karine Jean-Pierre checking all the boxes as press secretary.
It's yours.
So a few questions about the classified documents. Yeah. First off, is the president willing to be interviewed by federal investigators about his handling of classified documents?
So first, let me just say,
this is Chris
McGarian
from the AP.
This is something for the Department of.
I have a little question. There's an investigation ongoing. Will the president speak to
it? Ongoing review, right? Uh-huh. You're asking me about something in the future, and I am telling you that I'm not going to get ahead of what the Department of Justice is going to decide. Mm-hmm. Look, I want to reiterate what you heard from the president today. It is important for the American people to know this, is that the president has said he takes classified documents and information very seriously. This is something, as you all know, that he will not shy away from saying and has continued to say this week. And again, he was surprised that these records have been found. He does not know what's in them. And his team, once they identified that these documents were there, they immediately reached out to the archives, to the Department of Justice, and did the rightfully so.
They were discovered in November, Karine.
And they have
I just wish you could see the expressions of some of these reporters
very
in the video.
Closely with the Department of Justice. You actually heard AG, Attorney General Garland, say today that
there it is.
Heard from his team really shortly after the discovery.
Really shortly after.
I just want to make sure that this is
almost
understood.
3 months.
He takes this very seriously.
All right, so let's get more. That's the AP's Chris McGarian. Yeah, go ahead.
Confident that they are a thorough review. Will
taking that seriously.
Thank you, Victor.
This is the kind of thing that can cause government employees to lose a security clearance. This is a serious matter, as the White House has said. Was the president sloppy in his handling of classified material after multiple locations where classified documents are being found?
Look, I said this in the statement. It's in the statement of from his lawyer, Richard Sauber. And at the end, he said, we are confident that their thorough review will show that these documents were inadvertently misplaced. And the president and his lawyers acted promptly upon discovery of this mistake. I'm going to leave it there. That's what his lawyer said. But again, this is something that the president takes very seriously, and we have been coordinating. They have been coordinating. His lawyers have been coordinating very closely with the Department of Justice.
The last thing is, initial statement from the White House came on Monday. The president addressed us on Tuesday in Mexico City. All the conversation was about the documents in the office. However, according to the Attorney General, documents were found on December 20th in his garage in Wilmington. Why was that not immediately addressed? Is the White House being transparent about that if that was already known and not discussed up front?
So, you said transparent. I want to say that we have been transparent here. That is why the minute that his lawyers found those documents, they reported it. They reached out to the archives of the Department of Justice, and they did that voluntarily. And they were not compelled to do it. They did it voluntarily. Now, I want to step back a little bit as you're asking me about the timeline. Look, the lawyer said we have been working closely with the Department of Justice and coordinating a search that was still ongoing to ensure any additional documents were in the proper possession of the government. After that search, after the search concluded last night, we released a statement disclosing the facts from that search, as you all know, this morning. This is all part of the Justice Department process, and you heard the Attorney General speak to this today. So we are being very careful to be fully cooperative with the Department of Justice and providing details as appropriate as part of that.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that's enough. So whatever that word salad is, just like, that's exactly what Larry Klayman and I talked about. This they wheel Merrick Garland out there before she has to talk to him. But the funny thing is they wheel John Kirby out first. I Victoria, to your earlier point, I don't know why John Kirby just didn't stay out He should have been. He would have been the one to field these questions. Yeah, we have an ongoing investigation, and we're gonna abide by that. All right, all right.
Yeah, like, to your point, I mean, I don't really think any of these people do very well. To be completely honest,
sure.
I sound probably biased, but no, really, I think Kirby is the one that he finesses them better, whereas she just doesn't sound like she knows what she's talking about half the time. And then there's another journalist. I didn't know if you wanted to go that.
Oh yeah, yeah. So we had what
doesn't
was
make
it?
Sense.
The was the AP. All right, so let's see who we have so far. The NBC, the AP. And now CNN, Phil Mattingly. He loses it a little
her.
Bit.
Just tell me when you want to stop. There's just continuous
yeah,
stuff.
Let's hear Phil, and then maybe in the next segment we'll get to Ed O'Keefe from CBS. Go ahead, Phil Mattingly, CNN.
Yes.
Okay, and then I just want to score something that Chris was asking about. The review was underway when you guys gave a detailed statement about the first set of documents. The review was underway when the president spoke about the first set of documents. You're now saying that you didn't talk about the second set of documents discovered almost a month prior. Because a review was underway. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense.
No,
like, the
I
review
think
was underway the entire time. The only difference was that reporters had information on the first set of documents, and therefore you chose to exclude mm-hmm. the second set of documents until reporters got information on the second set of documents.
Well, let me unconfuse you for a second, Phil. Look, we are trying to do this by the book. And
yeah,
I said
sure.
yesterday this was under review by the Department of Justice. And the process is as such. When the president's lawyers realized that the documents existed, that they were there, they reached out to the archives. They reached out to the Department of Justice. Rightfully so, may
when
I ask.
They
that is what you're supposed to
they
do.
They were there. When
as
they
lawyers,
realized
that's what they
were
did.
There. Like, he
and they
like,
have fully been cooperating.
It's like Larry Klayman said.
With the Department of Justice. And again, I said
Biden had his faculties
answering a question.
When he was vice president.
You heard
when he
from
took
the attorney general. He
so
said shortly after
no
the documents were discovered, that we did outreach, the president's lawyers did outreach to the Department of Justice. And archivists.
Questioning that. That's not what we're asking about. We're asking about.
I'm telling you that there's a process. I just laid out what the process is.
I'm
and I'm telling you that we were trying to do this by the book, and it was an ongoing process. I'm not going to get beyond that.
Yeah.
But that is how this works.
Of course not, because both Biden and Karine Jean-Pierre can't, if you heard Biden's response yesterday, they can't go off of the notes. They can't go off of script. If you see, the actual visual of Peter Ducey asking Biden about the garage. Biden's looking down the entire time and reading, and then he's stumbling. So, like, I don't know why they didn't wheel the teleprompter out there for him. But there's a lot more, especially for so yeah. That was AP, the Associated Press, NBC, CNN. CBS's Ed O'Keefe probably had the best exchange, but I think we got to take a quick
That's
commercial.
That's coming up next.
That's coming up next. And I have some stories surrounding this, too, that I wanted to get into. 610-850-0999 if you want to talk about the Biden documents. And I don't mean to laugh, folks, okay? It's not. This is not funny. We all saw what happened to Donald Trump, and it was disgusting. And we all saw the media hits and all the talking heads and all the people out there acting like jackasses when this happened to Donald Trump. And now they have to eat every single one of their words because their president, when he was vice president, did something much worse. So it's 7:47 right now. I'm Fast Eddie Chiazzo. Chris back in on Monday. You're listening to Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
They're all living the devil may care, and I'm just a devil with no despair.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute away.
7:53 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. A little bit of Elvis Presley there for you on a Friday. I'm Fast Eddie Chiazzo. 610-850-0990 is the number to get in. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. And we have a great rest of the show for you coming up at 8:05, Sherry Few. She's the president and founder of the United States Parents Involved in Education. And at 8:30, EJ Antoni. Are you noticing a little less money in your pocket at the end of the month? Well, You're not alone. So stay tuned for that. The CPI numbers came out this week, and it's not good. And the Biden administration hasn't really been able to deal with it. You kind of see a lot of headlines flying at you, a lot of news breaking this week. But anyway, so we'll get into the financial stuff in a little while. Penn Biden Center, I wanted to touch this story real quick, and then we'll just get into some of CBS's Ed O'Keefe and his exchange with Karine Jean-Pierre. So this Penn Biden Center, the New York Post reported yesterday that the establishment attracted tens of millions in donations from anonymous Chinese donors. The DOJ probing how a small number of classified documents from Biden's years as vice president ended up in Washington, D.C. at the think tank. University of Pennsylvania received more than $30 million from Chinese donors shortly after the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, which functioned as an office for Joe Biden before he was elected president. That was announced in 2017. That's according to public records. The Penn Biden Center is a dark money revolving door nightmare where foreign competitors like China donated millions of dollars to the university so that they could have access to future high-ranking officials. That's Tom Anderson, the director of the Government Integrity Project. That's based in Virginia. Yeah, the National Legal and Policy Center. So yeah, this story's in the New York Post if you want to read all about it. Isabel Vincent, I won't have time to get into all of it, but yes, some of the hot clips, KJP and CBS's Ed O'Keefe. Here we go.
Who are? The first set of documents were found in November at the Penn Biden Center here in Washington. Mm-hmm. Why did it take until yesterday and until this morning, apparently, for whoever it was to inform Robert Lausch that that final document was found? Was that because there were press reports earlier this week?
Again,
and the hope was that nobody would find out?
Again.
Or was it because...
There is a process, an ongoing process that is occurring. We did this by the book. And what I mean by that is the moment that the lawyers discovered that the papers were there or the documents were there, they reached out to the archives, they reached out to the Department of Justice, and they immediately, rightfully so, reached out to them to let them know what they had discovered. And that is the process. That is what his lawyers did. Again, it's an ongoing process. As you stated in your question, I am limited in what I can say. It is now in the hands of the Department of Justice. They are reviewing this, as you know. The special counsel was announced by the Attorney General, and so I will leave it there.
So that's CBS's Ed O'Keefe. And it goes on, but I don't know if we have time. We're going to come up against the top of the hour. I'll try to get to it. But I didn't mention the name of who Merrick Garland named as the special counsel. That's Robert Herr. And this from Red State. Whether this will lead to any accountability when all is said and done is an open question, but there's no denying this is a very big deal, at least politically. Biden was getting ready to announce his run for re-election in 2024. That plan has been nuked by a scandal that now has him being probed for probable criminality. So if you heard my conversation with Larry Klayman earlier, we both had different theories on who, and Chris obviously had a different theory. You could check his podcast earlier in the week for Chris's take on this. But yes, so the question has to come to mind. So Biden goes out there on these tours selling these bills. I mean, he doesn't go out often much, but it's always a big deal when he does because he is the president of the United States, so he should be out there. But the media always celebrates, and I don't remember then this kind of questioning to the White House press room. I don't remember this line of questioning since the Afghanistan withdrawal. Okay, so this is the first time the press is really needling in on Joe Biden, and they have a lot of questions about these documents. So is this the play, finally, from Barack Obama and Susan Rice? Is this the play to get Joe Biden out and Kamala in? And the reason I bring that up, Biden was starting to feel his oats recently, if you'll recall. Remember even the French president Macron, when he came to the White House, he said, oh, congratulations very much to you, Biden, because he knew he was going to announce that he's going to run again in 2024. So is this it? Is this the media takedown of Biden, or do you think he weathers this? When I spoke with Larry Klayman earlier, he says he thinks Trump will get indicted for something else. They can't now indict him on the documents that he had at Mar-a-Lago. But he didn't think Biden would get indicted. So there is a lot to unpack with the two instances, the two sets of documents that we have here, and what is really going on. Because I'm seeing CNN, ABC, the AP, CBS, NBC. I mean, you can always count on Ducey for some questions in the press room, and he eventually mixes it up with Karine Jean-Pierre later on, but there's something happening. Something is happening. Joe Biden's starting to get confident about his 2024 run, and all of a sudden the media is asking questions in the way they did when the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan happened. So there's a lot going on. 610-850-0990. We'll get to some of it on the other side. Fast Eddie Chiazza with you. Chris Beck Monday. We'll be back.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Your common sense is really keeping me sane. Thank you.
I start in the morning with Chris, and then I go all the way through the day until I get out of my car when I come home.
Good morning, man. Love your show.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Just after 7 o'clock, it's Friday. You made it. Congratulations. Fast Eddie Chiazza, happy to be with you this morning. Programming note, Chris will be back live with you on Monday, behind the microphone, in the big chair, and ready to rock. So be ready for it on your end. Lots and lots to come. 610-850-0990 is the number if you want to get in. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Okay. Sherry Few, the president and founder of the United States Parents Involved in Education, USPIE.org. They got a film coming out, or actually it is, I think, Truth and Lies in American Education, and she's on the line now. Sherry, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be on your show this morning.
Oh, thanks so much for being with us. So, yeah, so tell us a bit about the film. And also, if it is available to watch right now, right?
It is. It absolutely is. Yes, we released it last year. Of course, we're in 2023. We've got to remind ourselves that every day. It's Truth and Lies in American Education, and it's available at the website truthandliesfilm.us. You can also watch it streaming on Salem Now. It's an expose of what's happening in our government schools, the indoctrination that is happening. Anything from, of course, critical race theory to the sexualization of children, the anti-American and anti-Christian propaganda that's being pumped into students. It's insidious, and it's time that it comes to an end. And the film is hopefully going to open people's eyes and motivate them to get involved to help us stop this indoctrination of children with our tax dollars.
Yeah, I saw within the film part of it, Dr. Carol Swain. She's great. She's been on the program with Chris before. Who are some of the other players in the Truth and Lies in American Education?
Well, we also have Dr. Gary Thompson, who is a child psychologist, and he speaks to critical race theory. He was also very active in the movement against Common Core. But Dr. Thompson brings a really unique perspective to critical race theory. Not only is he a child psychologist and talks about how, you know, shame and guilt that they put on white children is detrimental to their mental health, but also his perspective is the fact that he is married. He's a black man married to a white woman, and he's raising six biracial children. So obviously that gives him a unique perspective. We also have Alex Newman, who is a very outspoken journalist and author. He talks with us about how the United Nations is influencing education in America. And, you know, because our mission as an organization, that's USPI, United States Parents Involved in Education, our mission is to end the U.S. Department of Education and all federal education mandates, because that's where most of the nefarious pedagogies originate. But Alex explains that it's even deeper than that, that it's the United Nations that's really pulling the strings in the classrooms in America.
Which is scary. We're speaking to Sherry Few. She's the president and founder of the United States Parents Involved in Education, the new film Truth and Lies in American Education. That's the film out now. It's scary because it was discovered here in Bucks County. We had a health director, right, that well, we're not in Bucks County, but in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. There was a health director that recommended that the kids could go back to school. Right. He came up with a plan. He said they could do it. And this was back in 2021. The school board prevented that from happening. And what was uncovered through Freedom of Information requests, and it's still ongoing to this day, is that there was direct communication from the Pennsylvania Department of Health to the commissioners in Bucks County. And what that was, it was saying, like, look, I know what Dr. Damsker, that's the name of the health director in Bucks County, who had recommended the kids go back to school. That was his name. I know he's saying that you can go back, but you can't. So then the commissioners stopped it, like the school board, like they stopped the kids from going back. So what you're saying is if the curriculum is coming all the way down from the United Nations, I know of another story where the schools wouldn't get federal funding as part of this COVID funding if they didn't agree to do certain things. Now, I know specifically those things were, you know, they have to mask up, they have to be in so many days a week, like things like that. But this was like COVID funding tied to meals in schools. So the only reason I bring that up is I wonder how more nefarious it is.
Well, you're absolutely right. That is how the federal government controls our classrooms. Even though states only receive about 10% on average of their budget from the federal government, they control 100% of what's happening in the classroom, because they dangle these carrots out, these grants and other funding, like the COVID relief funding. The COVID relief funding was a huge package of funding. Billions of dollars were provided to every school in the country. Now, in order to receive that money, though, they had to certify, they had to guarantee that they were going to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion. And for your listeners that aren't familiar with those terms, they may sound, you know, fine. What's wrong with diversity? But those are code words for Marxist critical theories. They're being pushed in America's classrooms. So they had to certify that. They also had to certify that they would include social and emotional learning. And so this social and emotional learning is a vehicle that is used to also push the critical Marxist theories. So most people have heard of critical race theory,
yes.
But what they don't understand is there's other Marxist critical theories that are embedded in the classroom through something called culturally responsive pedagogy or culturally responsive learning. So this that's another culturally responsive teaching. That's another CRT acronym. Hmm. It includes all of these critical theories. It's critical feminist theory, critical queer theory, critical gender theory, so that, the people that are oppressed are every other race and ethnicity besides white folks, females. So the oppressors are white, male, heterosexuals, even Christians. So in this form of nefarious pedagogy, even Christians are called oppressors. And then all other religions, they call minority religions, are oppressed. This is the sick indoctrination that's happening in our government schools.
No, you're exactly right. And I want to point out, just highlight something going on in Chicago. There was a report released last week. The Office of the Inspector General revealed hundreds of Chicago public schools teachers sexually groomed, assaulted, and raped school students last year. Chicago, while they have a much higher population than Philadelphia, I mean, what's to stop that? So just to give you a little background on Philly, their school board isn't even elected by the people. Those people are appointed to the school board
here in Philadelphia. They just got a new superintendent. So there's no way that if this is happening in Chicago, that this can't happen in Philadelphia. Or it's not already, I should say.
Well, you know, I read that report, and I was just sickened. I mean, the content of the report itself is pornographic. Mm-hmm. It is really, it is sick. I just can't, it's evil. I can't even describe to your listeners what happened to those 600, yeah. in those 600 cases of these children that have been raped and sexually abused by staff and vendors of the Chicago public school system. And it was an internal audit, and all of this was exposed. So it's probably even far worse than what we read in this report. 600 students in one school year, and that includes elementary students. It's really pitiful. And, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise, though, because we've gone so far down this road of sexualizing children. You know, we blurred the lines. We don't even know what a boy and a girl is anymore. And we're teaching children at very young ages about transgenderism and homosexuality. You know, in Florida, you know, Governor DeSantis took a lot of grief for a bill that he signed into law that prohibited children K through 3, so kindergarten through third grade, from being taught these subjects. And who in their right mind would ever oppose that? Why would children in kindergarten be taught about gender dysphoria and any kind of sex topic? They are not even ready. They're not even thinking about sex at that age. So we blurred the line so much for children, and now that adults think it's okay to abuse children, it's really sad, and it really must stop.
Yep, so we have, you know, a story out of Chicago that was a terrible one out of Philadelphia, and then touched on Florida. But that brings me to—I mean, you're right. They can't even define woman at the highest level. A woman at the highest level on the SCOTUS. There, Ketanji Brown Jackson couldn't even answer the question, and now she's a Supreme Court justice. But speaking of Washington D.C., you had wrote an op-ed to now the Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Parents need more than a voice. So there is action that has to be taken at a federal level. I mean, God bless Ron DeSantis in Florida for getting ahead of it and taking the slings and arrows early against some of this curriculum and the sexualization of children at such a young age. But something has to happen in Washington. Could you expand on some of the things that you were reaching out to McCarthy about?
Yes. Well, so this was before he was actually elected speaker, but, you know, it was on the horizon, and he developed something they called the Commitment to America. You know, it's similar to Newt Gingrich's plan that he put together when he was Speaker. So it's promises he's making to Americans, you know, should he be elected Speaker. And it's a well-written document, much of which we agree with as an organization. But he didn't hit it quite strong enough when it comes to education. He said that parents need a voice. And we wrote to him and said they need more than a voice. They need control of their children's education. And again, that's our mission through closing the U.S. Department of Education, ending federal education mandate. We want to restore local and parental control of education. They need to get back in the driver's seat. And, you know, parents have been outspoken all over the country. We've seen it for 2 years now. And that's a good thing. It's a blessing. I would say it's the silver lining in COVID is that parents were able to see what their children were learning, and they've been shocked. They've woken up, you know, and they're active. They're at their school board meetings, and they're saying, enough is enough. You can't do this anymore. So that's what we were telling Speaker McCarthy, is that we wanted him to listen to parents firsthand, listen to these stories like the ones you and I are talking about, and let's make a definite difference. And the way he can start is by closing the U.S. Department of Education. And we developed a blueprint of how that can be done. You know, a lot of people talk about closing the Department of Ed. You know, Ronald Reagan said he was going to do it, and he was not able to do it. It's been a conversation and on the lips of many politicians for many years. But who actually has developed a plan? So that's why we did, United States Parents Involved in Education, and it's called the Blueprint to Close U.S. Ed. It can be found on our website, USPIE.org, and it's a step-by-step, simple plan for how we can return control to parents
of their children's education.
Yep, you're right. Once parents got a look under the hood during COVID, they were like, what the heck are you guys learning there in school? And I don't have the specific numbers in front of me. I was trying to pull them up, but there was a lot of stories just before the new year was out about the poor standardized testing performances. And I know there are some that they hold no weight to a lot to some educators and some people, and I get that entirely. But it's still indicative of the problems that remote learning caused, that these kids not being in school and learning things different from what they should be learning in school. So it was in Pennsylvania and New Jersey are the scores I had specifically before the new year, and they both had dropped drastically.
And it's not just in your states and your neighboring states, it's all over the country. It is a crisis in our country. You know, they have all this time to teach about sexuality and social emotional learning, critical race theory, all of this nonsense and solution, and yet they're not taking time to teach children the basics, and that is evident in the test scores. So, you know, we're spending so much money on education. We're sending our innocent children into these government indoctrination centers, and it's time to rethink the whole process. And for parents that have their children in government schools, you need to rethink what's in the best interest of your child, because this isn't going to be repaired overnight. And in the meantime, your child's mind is being destroyed.
All right. Sherry Few, president and founder of the United States Parents Involved in Education. The film out now. If you want to hear more about it, anything you want to say about the doc, Truth and Lies in American Education film, which you can watch at Salem Now, by the way. Any other closing thoughts on that?
Yes, I pray that everyone listening to this will go to the film's website, truthandliesfilm.us, and view the film and share it with friends and family. Maybe even have a gathering at your local church or in your community center. Watch it with other people and have a discussion afterward. And then you can go to our website, uspi.org, sign up to join the movement, see if we have a chapter in your state, and we can get you connected with like-minded people so that we can work together and stop this.
All right, Sherry Few, president, founder of the United States Parents Involved in Education. Thanks so much for spending a Friday with me. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you.
Bye. 822 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. We'll have EJ Antoni from the Heritage Foundation coming up next. We'll talk some economy as we're a little bit too far away from our buddy Steve Moore, who's in, who will be with Chris on Tuesday. But we had to tackle this before then. I'm Fast Eddie Chiazzo in for Chris. He will be back on Monday live, so don't miss it. And your calls, 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com.
Don't forget to join me, Sebastian Gorka, this afternoon at 3 for America First, right here on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
828 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Fast Eddie Chiazzo, the executive producer of the show, just in for Chris today, and he will be back with you on Monday. So don't miss it. Big chair, big microphone, 6 a.m., Chris DeGaulle. With you Monday. So I know we have some calls on the line. We have Rick and one other, but I'm gonna go to my next guest, if that's all right, Victoria, first, if you guys can hang on the
You're
line.
You're the boss, Eddie.
Yeah, right.
I'm just here to make you look good.
As you do, and I appreciate it. So, research fellow for regional economics in the Center for Data Analysis. That's a lot. Wanted to get that out there. That's at the Heritage Foundation. EJ Antoni. Welcome back to the program, EJ.
Well, Eddie, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you had texted me, I think it was back in September, and you had shown research saying Americans have lost about $7,200 of their income, and it got me thinking immediately about a conversation my wife and I were having. Literally, I think the day or two before you had texted me, it seemed like our money was evaporating. We look over the statements and are like, man, our grocery trips, they're really starting to get expensive. I mean, I had noticed $50 and $75 and $100 more. Whoa, filling up our tanks, really expensive. So in other words, we weren't crazy thinking that our balance kept getting lower and lower, because we budget fairly well and you actually showed what was up then. So can you tell us what's happening now?
Sure, sure. So, Eddie, now that figure has actually gone all the way up to $7,400. And what's really amazing for a lot of Americans, you know, they're saying, okay, I don't understand why my paycheck is getting bigger, but I'm buying less. Why is it I'm able to afford less stuff even though I make more money? And that is the phenomenon of inflation. It's not that the price of any one thing is going up. It's that the value of the dollar is going down. And that's because the Federal Reserve keeps printing more dollars in order to pay for these massive government deficits at the federal level. But now on top of that, now that the Federal Reserve is finally trying to raise rates to fight that inflation, what they're doing is they're increasing borrowing costs. So that means you're paying more in interest on everything from a mortgage to an auto loan, everything from student loans to credit card debt, for example. Credit card debt, by the way, is at the highest point it's ever been. The average interest rate is at the highest point it's ever been. It's about 20% now. So people are paying an extra $1,400 in borrowing costs. So you add this all together, those higher borrowing costs and the higher inflation, and families are just really genuinely getting crushed right now.
We're speaking with E.J. Antoni from the Heritage Foundation. No, that's exactly right. Chris had a story earlier in the week that holiday spending, if you look at the credit card debt racked up, like that's what most people used during the holidays, then they used it quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really scary is that even going into the holiday season, we were seeing people switch from putting just big ticket items onto credit cards, which is what they're used for a lot of times. They were starting to put everyday items. We're talking groceries on credit cards. And it's one thing to use a credit card at the grocery store, let's say, because you want the cash back or whatever rewards program it might be, the miles, right? But it's another thing when people are using credit cards at grocery stores because they don't have the cash. In other words, they can't pay the credit card a month. They need to finance their food.
Yeah, and that's – I'm just looking at some of the costs here, and I want to get into the Consumer Pricing Index, if you can, with us here. Just quick picture, baby food up 11.8%, diapers up 20%, car seats, oh my gosh, which we need another one of, our kid just grew out of his, 41% increase.
Yeah, and what's really scary too, the numbers are, I don't want to say they're getting deceptive, but they can be a little misleading because some people are beginning to look at these numbers, some of them, and say, oh, in the last year, some prices went up, some prices went down. In the last year, some prices didn't go up that much. So what we try to do is look at, okay, how much did these things go up over the last 2 years? In other words, since January of 21, when Biden got inaugurated. And I mean, you're looking at items that are up 200-300% in some cases. And what's really scary is that a lot of times these are items that are disproportionately bought by people who don't have much income to start with, because you're seeing two things. One, inflation, right? That's driving everything up. But the other thing is that many people in the middle class are starting to switch to cheaper sources of protein, for example. And that's one of the reasons why the demand for eggs has increased so substantially. And that's helping to drive up the price even further. I mean, you have some parts of the country where eggs are literally selling for a dollar, not a dollar a dozen, a dollar a piece.
Wow. Now we're speaking with E.J. Antoni from the Heritage Foundation. And that's so what is next? I hear that the Fed will once again raise rates, which will obviously that's not going to stop. But, well, I've heard two things. OK, I've heard the Fed waited way too long to start doing what they're doing. But now that we're here, they're doing it too aggressively. So what's the resolution to this, I should say? What can we expect?
Well, I mean, the problem is what the Fed has basically done. I guess one analogy you could use is a car, right? And they kept their foot on the gas way too long and made the car go way too fast. And that's what's causing the inflation. But now, in order to bring that inflation down, they're slamming on the brake, and they need to do that. But you know, if you don't let the car accelerate for so long, you don't have to slam on the brake so fast before you run into the brick wall. But unfortunately, now that's what they're having to do. And so, yes, they do need to raise rates. But the other thing is the Fed has basically been manipulating a lot of things besides interest rates that unfortunately are a little too complicated to get into. But essentially what they have been doing is trying to starve the private market for capital in order to provide all that liquidity to the government to spend. And so that is doing two things. Number one, driving inflation. But number two, it's strangling economic growth. They did this after the Great Recession, the housing crash, and the financial crisis. And that's one of the reasons why the economy grew so slowly after 2009. And so what they really need to do is get back to normal operations that will reduce inflation, that will increase economic growth. But the other thing it's going to do is it's going to make it very hard for the Treasury Department to sell their bonds because there's not going to be enough people to buy them once the Fed stops doing so.
And EJ Antoni, we're speaking with right now from the Heritage Foundation. And I don't, if this is too broad of a topic, I don't mean to throw it on you. I just have to ask. I've heard even that like housing prices, like the housing market, is not included in any of this. Not your research, but even from the federal government on down, it's just not showing. Like, we don't see what's happening pretty much in the housing market. Is that true?
It's partly true, Eddie. What happens is that it is very difficult for the Department of Labor to collect data on housing crises, especially rents, and they make it even more difficult for themselves because of their poor methodology. So what they have to do is they have to take about 6 months worth of data in order to have a large enough data sample for the data to actually be worth anything. Because if your survey sample is not large enough, then your what we call your error is too large and the number could be way off. So the problem with what they do is that you have this tremendous lag in those price changes. And so some of the increase in home prices we still have not seen yet come out in the CPI. But then by the same token, once all those price increases are built into the index, then as we've seen some price decreases, for example, in the last couple of months, it'll be several more months before that gets incorporated fully into the index as well. So unfortunately, they just really don't have a good way to measure. And again, they make it worse by their own poor methodology.
Yep, that's right. And that's where I heard it. It was Penn Wharton had put out, or no, it was one of the professors from Penn Wharton was like screaming on CNBC about how nobody's talking about the housing crash coming. I'm thinking, housing crash? What? So no, I appreciate you clearing that up for me. So the next steps, I think in the Biden, in the Inflation Reduction Act, that saw the tax increases. So we're looking at tax increases, even though Biden has said no one under 400,000 is going to be hit with that. Am I correct in the right? Did I have it in the right bill that's coming?
Oh, sure, because you can't have it both ways, right? The White House is trying to say the Inflation Reduction Act increases revenue, but then they also turn around and say it doesn't increase taxes. I'm sorry, how does the government increase revenue without increasing taxes? Oh, that's right, it's the exact same thing. And there are taxes in here on coal, on oil, on natural gas. And you may say, hey, I drive an electric car. You know, I have a heat pump to heat my home. I don't use any of those fuel sources. Guess what? Natural gas and oil are used to make chemical blend stocks that go into literally everything from fertilizer to the clothes you're wearing to the materials that are used to produce your fancy electric car. So you are going to hit by these taxes. You're just going to be hit by them indirectly. And again, it's going to further increase prices for almost everything we buy.
That's EJ Antoni from the Heritage Foundation, doing great work. If you want to read some of what we talked about, his study, it was put onto paper at foxbusiness.com. American families have lost $7,400 due to inflation. I know I opened with $7,200, but yep, we're losing $200 more on average. But it's funny, MSNBC just put a graphic up. It was, what, 9% in June, but only 6.5% in December. So they say, hey, we're ready to roll, baby. It's coming down. They're optimistic.
Well, that's certainly damning with faint praise, right? To say, hey, inflation is only two-thirds as bad as it was when we drove it up to catastrophic levels.
Right. Follow his work. Again, this piece, American families have lost $7,400 due to inflation rate hikes under Biden. So great to talk with you. EJ Antoni, have a great weekend.
Well, Eddie, thank you for having me.
love your face, and I'll admire your expensive taste. And who cares if I'm intervention? I wanna be praised from a new perspective. But leaving now would be a good idea. So catch me.
All right, you made it. End of the week. It's Friday. Fast Eddie Chiazza with you, 8:45 right now. Chris will be back with you live on Monday, 6 a.m., so don't miss it. I'm in for Chris today. And Chris, on every Friday, does Open Line Friday as a tribute to Rush. So, oh boy, we're going to see how I can handle this one. Victoria, is everything okay? Are we going to be good? All right. I'm scared. No, I'm just kidding. But if you'd like to get in on Open Line Friday, 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990 is the number. Okay, let's do it. Norm from Doylestown. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir. Go ahead.
All right, good. I just want to follow up from the parent that was on before, earlier, talking about education and children's education. And I just want to indicate that my concerns are for my grandchildren.
Sure.
And I am a strong advocate of universal vouchers for education. And let me even say, I believe in lifelong vouchers for education, meaning that you have it for your whole life, that you can get put money into your a savings account. But let's talk about the measures. You need performance measures to be able to perform this way.
Uh-huh.
Because the parents, or the children, basically, the parents have to have a measure of whether or not the children are getting what they're supposed to get. And there's got to be organizations like maybe even Hillsdale College that can put out tests that the children should be measured on, and parents can very well be part of that testing process to say that, well, are they living up to no CRT? Are they living up to no sexual deviance?
I see what you're saying.
And are they getting an education on reading, writing, and arithmetic?
All right, Norm. No, I appreciate the call. And what you're saying, sadly, especially with a Governor Shapiro and a Democrat control of the House in Pennsylvania, those vouchers, you choosing the school you want to go to, school choice, as more broadly called, that's not going to happen. If you want to... any of the things that you were talking about, if you want your children to get an education that doesn't include CRT and gender-bending curriculum, you're going to have to do it yourself. And actually, to invoke Chris for a sec, he and his wife do a podcast called Making the Leap. It's for the Herzog Foundation, and there is a lot of information on that, just how to get the funding. They've spoken with parents who, private school is expensive, right? It's not cheap. And if the response is, well, I can't afford it, so my kid can't go there, there's a different way, and you can find it and you can discover it. So I encourage you to listen to Chris and Christine Stigall's podcast, Making the Leap with the Herzog Foundation. A lot of good information there. More in depth. I can't help you. Unfortunately, you are in the swamp in PA, and it's probably only going to get worse. So we're going to have to fight it from a local level, as they are in Central Bucks. All right. Next, Steve from Devon on Open Line Friday. Go ahead, Steve. Good morning.
Hey. Oh, good. How are you today?
All right.
So many things to talk about. First, speaking with your guest, Antoni, and I almost wanted to comment on this
sure.
last caller, too. But the thing that we're not looking at, and I've been talking to Rush about this, is we always have to, whatever topic we're talking about, we have to remember that we have to bring up, why is it being done? And ultimately, if you look at the left's platform, their ideology, just about everything they do is about making the cost of living more difficult, you know, lowering the population. That's what it is. That's their strategy. If you bring up anything, I mean, the abortion issue, everything, the education, the price of schools, you know, the inflation that we're suffering through right now. It's all about, and COVID, the vaccines, again, you know, all of it is about lowering the population. And, you know, I'm at the point where I don't see why we've decided. Paul Johnson died yesterday. He's a historian. And he wrote a book called Modern Times. And so 40 years ago, he was warning us that Western society had become too enamored, too dependent, too dependent on the political class.
Yes.
700 years ago, the West would have never have allowed the political class to impact their lives the way they do. The political class would have been there to tax and to provide services, but would have never have put itself in the business of child rearing.
Nope, Steve, I appreciate the call. You're right. What the environment that the Democrats have created over a very long period of time, you got to give it to them for this. They have embedded themselves in the institutions in America, academic institutions. Democrats played the long game. And they say that about us with abortion, saying that, oh, it's always been the Republicans' goal to overturn Roe v. Wade. But in fact, it's the left that's been doing it, and they've been doing it quietly. And sadly, we're behind. And they've created an environment. They create policies where they want people to depend on them. I think I mentioned some of this yesterday. They would rather you take public transportation when, you know, you're an American man. If you want a car, you should be able to drive a car. If you work hard and you have one and you need to get from A to B, then you should do it. That's not what they want. They want you dependent on them. And yes, this push to electric vehicles. I can't believe I'm saying this, but the push to end gas stoves is very insidious, but you have to understand that they've been embedded in this in a very long time, and they've been attacking us for a very long time. And with the schools, we found out way too late, unfortunately. Nobody really knew that this was happening until they got under the look under the hood during COVID. So stay strong out there, Steve. There is a way to fight, and there's also a great piece at PJ Media I didn't get to that Dennis Prager wrote, called like America is the worst exporter of ideas. It's really good. That's a PJ Media Now from one of the Salem hosts, Dennis Prager. I encourage you to read that and have hope, man. We're going to fight. We're going to fight this together, okay? So let's go to Rick in Roxborough on Open Line Friday. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ed, how you doing? What did you say? You're doing a great job as a fill-in for Chris. Guys are both great as the dynamic duo, you know?
Oh, thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate you saying.
And I got two things this morning. One's totally a 360 degree from what everybody's talking about.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing is about maybe conservative groups in this area. So first one is about mRNA. So I read a lot of Citizens Free Press, stuff like that. And Robert Malone comes up a lot. And I'm kind of in the middle about what's going on and, you know, athletes dropping and stuff like that. But sure. I'm hearing now that the mRNA, they're looking into putting this because it's into like dairy and giving it to like using it for like foot and mouth vaccines for, you know, cows. Yeah. And I'm reading a lot about that. They said it's coming. And they're trying to, there was an article that came out a little bit in the summer about doing, you know, vaccines for spinach and lettuce. And the craziness to me is beyond belief. So I don't know where that's going. I don't know. Were you aware of it? Have you heard anything? Or
there, honestly, there was a story that crossed my desk this week about it. And there was something, surprisingly, I think an audio cut I may have had last week about Bill Gates talking about something like that. But I can't say that I'm well read in it. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if this mRNA, it's like the golden ticket almost. It's been in the news. I think the two inventors of the technology from the University of Pennsylvania, I think they were just awarded like a Nobel Prize or something like that.
Right. But my concern is, so are they going to label this, because it's like peanut allergies?
Right.
You know, there's people that have had adverse reactions to these shots, you know, and been kind of, you know, they've been kicked out of society in a sense because, well, they're allergic to it. They can't take the shot. The doctors advised against it. So now this is coming full steam.
Yep. No, it's very scary. And yesterday I had a guest on. I learned about all the, there was like lead in baby food, like lead, arsenic. It's wild. So I don't doubt it. And what was your other point, Rick?
So are there any conservative groups? I mean, you guys have been my therapist for since COVID, and it's been great. But yeah, so is there any conservative groups in you know, for organizing? I did poll watching, and it was a real eye opener. Everything was ran; it seemed the way it was, but you don't see that until you don't see it behind the curtain down in Philly. But yeah, is there any way to kind of, are there any conservative? And I know Turning Point has one, but I couldn't find anything in this area. But is there any membership or anything here where, you know, people can organize, at least in Philly? Because my wife's not moving, so that means I'm not moving either. I'm going to get out, but I'm stuck, man.
No, so. I hear you. I'm the same way. I love my city so much. And I there is the Don't Tread on Philly people are actually really good. If you go to donttreadonphilly.com. And what's good about that group is it is more libertarian. They were talking about maybe putting up a candidate, but when I spoke to them, one thing I liked about speaking with them is they understood the political landscape in Philadelphia and just how hard it is for a Republican to win. They knew the players involved, especially in like the state house and city politics. So I would encourage you to check donttreadonphilly.com. And actually, I think they have one of their happy hours coming up, if it's not, or if it's just passed. So now, second Wednesday of every month, Don't Tread on Philly. Where's this one? January 11th. So that one just passed. So yeah, you'll have to get to the next one in February. And also, I would follow some of what Sam Oropeza is doing. He's running for Philadelphia City Council at large, looking to take the other at large seat. And that would be a pickup, but the thing I've noticed about his campaign and how he's communicating with people via social media, he's not in any way supported by the Philadelphia Republican establishment. And what I mean by the Philadelphia Republican establishment is they are pretty much Democrats handpicked by Democrats to be Republicans in Philadelphia. Think Al Schmidt, for example. So Sam Oropeza for city council at large, he has some gatherings coming up, and Don't Tread on Philly.
Okay. I appreciate it. Yeah, I usually shop at ShopRite. So, I mean, I was a big fan of Jeff Brown and what he's done, like, during the riots and stuff. But then I saw the pictures with the Obamas, and I'm just, so he's out.
No, I get you. It's going to be a fight, and hopefully we get to talk about it soon. Thank you so much, Rick. Have a great weekend. All right, Fred from Ardmore. You have 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Tell me if I'm missing something.
Sure.
Biden's own lawyers found those boxes, right?
Yeah.
Why do we even know about anything? Why didn't they just squash it? I don't get it. Have any Republicans seen these things?
No, I mean, they were discovered back in November. So the fact
by
that
whom?
Good question. Let me go back. Oh man, honestly, I'm running out of time here. Sorry.
I'm surprised we know anything about it.
Yeah, no, we will, and that's why the Republicans taking over Congress has a lot to do with that. That's why this information is coming out now. We just have to know if it's put out there by the Democrats to take Biden out or if it's not. And I think we had one more. Sorry, Charles in Harleysville, if you can give us a call back next on the next Open Line Friday. Guys, I'm out of time. We did it, Open Line Friday at the end there. Wow. Victoria, thank you so much for your help the next 2 days. Chris will be back Monday, 6 a.m. Don't miss it. Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. WNTP Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.